I think it's a way of thinking that is more holistic, probably more open as well. And so we are not thinking in silos. We're thinking broadly. We're allowing creativity in the process of the technical in a way that you get to embrace all of that. There is a human aspect and ethics in all of it as well. To me, we get to a more intelligent place when we question and think broadly, understand what we don't know and learn those areas. When we stay in silos, we really limit our intelligence. And I think history has shown that. What I'm excited about for a more intelligent tomorrow is more collaboration. And I think it's really interesting to just see technology tools right now that allow a lot more collaboration. And I think as that evolves, we go back into that dimension of broad thinking where we don't have to necessarily be expert in everything, but our mindsets should be open. We really need to listen to each other and we need to respect everybody at the table and appreciate the differences in thought that are really, really important, both as an individual or as an organization and definitely for society.
Hello, and welcome to More Intelligent Tomorrow, a wide-ranging exploration of the potential impact of AI on the world around us, as envisioned by the future heroes of the human and machine intelligence revolution. How does a large and established company innovate? We'll discuss this and more with Bina Kalolan on today's episode. And now, your guest host, Dan Wright.
Thanks everyone for joining us. Today we have Bina Kalola, the Managing Director for Global Banking and Markets, Financial Technology and Innovation at Bank of America. Bina, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Bina, we have some common background. So we were both trained as lawyers. Obviously now we're both in technology and you are just a very successful woman executive in tech in addition. So I'd love to hear a little bit from you about your background and how you got to where you are today.
Yeah, it's been a really interesting path full of lots of forks. My intention was to be in politics. You know, Kamala Harris would have been a role model for me. And I ended up studying political economy and really thinking I was off to law school. And then I decided I wasn't quite ready to go to law school. So I took a detour to Wall Street, you know, non sequitur there. And I really enjoyed it. And I had an opportunity to really innovate. I decided to come up with different ways to what we would call automate some processes that automated me out of my role, which was actually exciting because I got to, in a short period of time, take on many different jobs at Salomon Brothers. But I did ultimately decide to go to law school, as you said, and I joined a big New York law firm, did M&A, private equity, IPOs. And I just knew it wasn't for me, but this was at the time that I started to really get excited about what was going on in the startup world. And it's something that has always been a passion or underlying passion since I was a little girl, just starting my own little companies. So I decided to leave. I went to a startup out of Australia and India, and we were incubating ideas. We were focused on pitching an idea to Pepsi, which was a gaming and branding website, a little bit before its time. So it didn't quite work out. And I joined Merrill Lynch. The role was legal, but it was a lot of business and really working on our operating M&A, joint ventures, really complex growth initiatives. And I also had this other role. It seems to be something that happens in my career. I have really different roles at the same time. I was taking care and leading all of the responsibilities for the Audit Finance Committee of the Board of Directors. And through all of these roles, I had the opportunity to focus on a lot of Asia initiatives. And the one that was really calling me was strategic investments. And so I was asked to build a role called strategic investments in a portfolio, basically a venture capital portfolio, but at the same time to really learn the trading business and to understand where electronic trading was going and where was the market structure going. So we built a really great portfolio of investments alongside our strategies. And in 2014, I was asked to at another role, which was the fixed income electronic trading strategy. And it was in that role that led me to my current role. And if you take a look at where I thought our assets were and continue to be, it's around data. And so data always excites me and excited me then. And I started looking at predictive analytics tools. We started looking at companies in the space, spent a lot of time on the West Coast, which was really early and exciting time to adopt. With that and my interest in blockchain and how that was going to impact finance, I was asked the following year to take on the global banking and markets, fintech, innovation and investments role. And over the past 5 years that I've been doing this role, it's definitely evolved and changed and shifted. But what's been really exciting along this journey and this path is that I've been able to be an entrepreneur internally to transform and to innovate within a broad scope of businesses, and at the same time, really learn anything that I thought was of interest either to me or of interest to the businesses that I was covering. So it's been an incredible journey so far. I'm looking forward to see what comes up next, but this is a truly exciting time to be in the innovation role.
Wow. I mean, what an amazing journey to go from law to operating at a startup and then obviously in financial services and investing and having often many different roles at the same time and traveling all over the world. So you've done quite a bit. What are some of the top lessons that you've taken from that journey that you try to apply in your current role?
I would say from the first role at Salomon Brothers, it was not being afraid. You know, I really had never written a macro in Excel. I hadn't really thought about doing something myself where I didn't understand what the solution would be. But I basically said, you know what, I'm going to take whatever role I have and I'm always going to make it better. So that was the first lesson. And that brought the next job offer. I think the important part of understanding that there are no failures. So even though the startup didn't work, I took the risk to go. And it really changed how people perceive me in the marketplace as well and the opportunities that they afforded me. I also learned a lot about myself. And I think sometimes we forget about that we look at the success based on either economics or title or how did the company do. But I think the learning is sometimes personal and soft skills and confidence and understanding what you enjoy, where your passions are, where your strengths are. I think the next big lesson I learned was that you need to take risk. And so in all of these roles that were offered to me that didn't exist, a lot of people would be really afraid of those. But I did have a particular executive who told me to take the risk and that the big payoffs required that. So that was fantastic. The other one that I think people may not always think about is, for me, I think when we think about being in a world, whether it's technology or M&A, it's traditionally been called like a man's world. And understanding your own style and embracing who right. you are and your most sincere self. Whether I went into a $1 billion transaction or a $2 million transaction, I tried to stay very true to my own style. You know, whether that was, I have to say, you know, walking in with a pink Prada skirt because I knew the other side would underestimate me, and that was okay. Right. At the end of the deal, I always got a job offer by the other side. You know, so I feel what's important, especially being a woman in these particular areas and industries, is actually embracing being a woman and not trying to be a different style than what you're comfortable with. Now, there's one thing about challenging yourself to grow, but it's another to try and have a style that is not yours. So those are some of my key learnings. There are many.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, lots of great learnings there and so many great takeaways, everything from how to be successful as a woman coming up in technology to, I love what you said about not being afraid to take risks or afraid to fail. I totally agree with that. Similar to you, I was at the law firm and then decided to go to a 100-person startup. And I remember that feeling a little crazy and people thought I was crazy, but you just gain so much through that experience and then it inspires you to take other risks. So love what you said there.
I'm sure you rolled up your sleeves and you learned a lot along the way, right? When you go to a 100-person startup or a 10-person startup, you will be surprised what you will learn about yourself and your resilience. And I'm sure you had a lot of experiences you did not expect.
Oh, yeah. It's the best way to grow. You're battle tested. You know, your role is about driving technology and innovation across one of the largest banks in the world. So I'd love to hear about how you are able to do that. I mean, it's an extreme challenge to try to transform an entity as big as Bank of America using technology. So how do you navigate all of that?
I think the way I would have answered this question in 2015 when I started was probably different from how I'll answer it now. But if I look at the roadmap of where we started, you know, we had to shift culture. And that culture was both a bottoms-up approach and a top-down approach. And what I mean by that is, you know, these are a lot of very daunting words and terms that people throw around and use. And if it's not in somebody's vernacular and it's not there every day, they're not really sure what it is. And so you really need to step back and help people understand first, what are you presenting? When we use AI, well, let's talk about the subsets. What are we really talking about? And then how does it work? And what does it do? And I would start with, well, what do you need to solve? If you could have something, what would you want to have? And so when you start at it from what's either the business problem or the opportunity, you get everybody really excited. And then the technology is the solution to get there, right? And I think that making sure that people understand, you know, we would get a lot like, well, is this all about FTE reduction? I'm like, it really isn't. I just haven't heard that from executive management. But if I can get you back a few hours in your day where you don't have to cut and paste information from different systems, wouldn't you like that? So to today, what I think has happened is people really understand, they're reading about it. They've met Data Robot. They understand better what it can do for us. Now, my other side of this is to say, you know what, it's not necessarily either a magic wand or something you can switch on and walk away from. That machine learning is an iterative process, for example, and that we really need to be the SME behind a lot of the development and what we're doing with the technology. So it's come full 180, which is super exciting. And in this period of time of COVID and working from home, what I have found is people have had a chance to really reflect and think, and I think about their day jobs and what would make a difference. And so we see the velocity of interest growing every day.
You're listening to More Intelligent Tomorrow, an artificial intelligence podcast brought to you in high fidelity by Data Robot.
One thing that you mentioned a little bit earlier was about the power of data and how there's more data than there's ever been in history. That data is changing faster than at any point in history, especially with what's going on with the current pandemic. How do you think about the possibilities to use data to help the bank and ultimately to, you know, help business and society more broadly?
Yeah, great question. And I know Data Robot is doing a lot. You know, I am amazed of how much data we produce. So we're producing more, obviously, globally, all of us as individuals, all of us as companies. But we've always produced a ton of data and we've harnessed the structured data. But there's a lot in the unstructured data. And so I really have spent a lot of time in an area that people weren't spending as much time, which is the unstructured data, whether that be in text form, voice, contract, on a public filing, and really understanding how can we better serve our clients. There's a lot of information there and nobody really has time to give you everything. And how do you distill this information at scale and really find insight in sometimes microseconds?
So
the speed at which markets move, the amount of disparate information, how do you pull it together? First and foremost, my role is to try and help just extract and harness the data into data sets, data formats that can then be used in multiple different ways. So once we can do that with getting all of the data cleansing and wrangling and joining and get it in a form that we can unlock, we then have multiple ideas and use cases. So whether it's working with Data Robot on predictive analytics or it's thinking about intelligent workflow automation. We have to actually put this in a place that we can use. I thereafter really think about how do we better serve our clients? How do we think about risk in society? How do we think about information that's publicly available? But at the same time, you know, we have to be mindful of the guardrails and the governance and who sees what. Do we use certain data? Do we respect? And we're really, really mindful of respecting privacy, whether it be a rule of law or an agreement with our clients. So I think it's both amazing what we're going to be able to do, but at the same time, those guardrails and the governance are really critical. And I think we're all globally in that early stage of both sides of this.
Are there any other technologies besides the technologies that you've already mentioned that you're really excited about as you look into the future?
Yeah, so I mentioned natural language processing, machine learning. You know, one thing that I'm seeing a huge transformation and trend is just the adoption and growth of open source libraries and effectively that crowdsourcing, because it does a few different things. My role is to really look to the outside and to see what other solutions there are, but at the heart of it, it's to be agnostic about which solution we choose, whether it's a build or a buy. And so there's open source libraries, and in fact, is almost a disruptor to having to look to the outside. It enables a lot of the younger companies to accelerate their development as well as to save capital, right? So you can get to the fun stuff. I'm going to look forward to seeing what actually happens there. That is some of it. But to me, a lot of this around, under the artificial intelligence umbrella is a combination of different techniques, I'll call them. What we're seeing as well is people partnering with each other along these emerging technologies. So being expert in one or a few different products and then marrying it with another, which is really exciting. And I definitely see it happening already. I think that that growth of the combination and the product is going to be absolutely incredible.
Yeah, when you think about not only the rate at which technology is developing, but also how it's all working together in a little more of a connected way than maybe in the past, where do you see us in 5 years? And where do you see technology playing a role as we play out the coming years here?
I think that people will be far less fearful of the adoption. I for sure believe cloud plays a big part in both the compute power as well as the cost reduction. So you'll continue to see a lot of innovation over the next 5 years. You know, I'm not sure exactly where we get to kind of the guardless autonomous driving. And by that, I don't mean just cars, but will just run on itself and be automated without the human. But I think as the human gets more comfortable, we're going to see that amazing combination. And then we're going to really understand our data. We're going to all be, to some degree, a data scientist to interpret data and understand that. And I think that's going to be an interesting evolution versus waiting to be told something. I definitely think workflows are going to change for sure. And I think people are going to actually be happy about that. And that sounds odd. I was just on a call and people were saying, well, how would we have dealt with work from home without video? I'm like, you kind of adopt to whatever the reality is and you just work through it and it happens, right? Things don't stop. Worldwide, I think we'll see more democratization. You and I have had this conversation around just even agritech, which is so exciting. I love going to the farmer's market on a Saturday morning. That's where you will find me. Recycle bags. I go to every farm stand and I try and support everybody. And it's a really tough business. Now imagine what agritech and the data that gets democratized across farmers, big and small.
Right.
That's absolutely incredible. And then we think about what does that mean globally for a lot of emerging countries and countries that can't produce food the same way we can here in the United States. So I think about worldwide, I hope that all of this really brings up everybody across different economic strength, across different countries for where they are now and what we can all do together.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think we're in a unique time. And I think that combination of human and machine intelligence, it's going to paint a very bright future for us. How do you keep up, given that this change is happening so fast? Do you have any strategies to make sure that you're seeing around corners and staying ahead of the curve?
You know, I think one of the reasons I've been able to pivot and to learn something that I didn't learn in school is that, number one, I think you have to stay humble, you have to stay curious, and you have to ask a lot of questions. You also have to be willing to learn on your own. So I spend a lot of time going to conferences, reading different articles, and as much as I can, asking questions. I never go into a meeting without having questions or questions after the fact and calling somebody. And sometimes my questions are geared towards a problem I'm trying to solve, but I don't assume the answer. So I've been able to learn an incredible amount. I think I just have an intellectual curiosity about lots of different things and a personality to kind of dive in. I haven't taught myself to code in Python, but I feel really good about my judgment and understanding collaborating with experts that are around me. So understanding that marriage of what is the technology, but then what is the business need and opportunity is really what guides me to think about what's 2 to 3 years out and what's the potential.
That makes sense. And you spoke a little bit about the fear of technology and how that can be kind of the counterweight to all this innovation and driving adoption. How do you help to overcome that fear? And obviously, some amount of that fear is healthy. You want to make sure that, again, your technology can be trusted. But how do you strike the right balance there?
Usually, I start with just explaining, just in a really simple fashion, what something is and what something is not, how it actually works without making somebody ask that question. And I think how you approach that and knowing that they're the SME in their world, I think is really important. So always very respectful, always about sharing the information, putting it in front of whomever it is. And then, you know, sometimes you just have to ask the question of what is your approach? Does that make sense? Getting them kind of down this trail to say, would you like another solution? And it could look like this. And then what are your concerns, right? And let them answer that, because usually you'll be able to answer it. If it's an elephant in the room, address it. It's about explaining the choice of the technology. That's a conversation. So you have to keep a dialogue going and not think that the 30 minutes you have on the calendar, you're going to come out with a decision, funding, and it's going to be a go. It's a process, and you have to have patience in that process and give people time to understand, to reflect, and then come to their own place and to go through a process of asking questions.
You're listening to More Intelligent Tomorrow, an artificial intelligence podcast brought to you in high fidelity by Data Robot.
Bina, the name of this segment is More Intelligent Tomorrow. I'd love to hear a little bit about what does that mean to you, whether it's 5 years, 10 years, 20 years down the road. What do you see in terms of a more intelligent tomorrow in the future?
You know, I think it's a way of thinking that is more holistic, probably more open as well. And so we are not thinking in silos. We're thinking broadly. We're allowing creativity in the process of the technical in a way that you get to embrace all of that. There is a human aspect and ethics in all of it as well. Different principles we can learn from each other. Again, like sort of Eastern, Western principles, if you were to think about healthcare even, and just really being open to it. To me, we get to a more intelligent place when we question and think broadly, understand what we don't know and learn those areas. When we stay in silos, we really limit our intelligence. And I think history has shown that. And what I feel is that the more people we can give more education and information to, we will get more of that insight. What I'm excited about for a more intelligent tomorrow is also more collaboration. And I think it's really interesting to just see technology tools right now that allow a lot more collaboration. I think as that evolves, we go back into that dimension of broad thinking where we don't have to necessarily be expert in everything, but our mindsets should be open. We really need to listen to each other and we need to respect everybody at the table and appreciate, you know, it might sound trite, the differences, but I think it's the differences in thought and intellect that are really, really important, both as an individual or as an organization and definitely for society.
That sounds like a more intelligent tomorrow to me. So looking forward to it. Bina, if you were to give some advice to younger people, younger women like you who are growing up and looking to follow in your footsteps, what are some things that you would tell them?
I love this question. One would be, as a younger person, embrace your mentors. You know, we talk a lot about sponsorship, which is also very important. But I look at some of my mentors who are now in some roles that are just incredible. And I literally texting somebody this morning, commenting on one of my mentors who is in an amazing seat. Having mentors and asking them questions, I think some of the mistakes I made along the way is not necessarily asking people about opportunities that were presented to me, sort of thinking I knew the path I should be on. But I didn't say, oh, well, when Stanford Business School called or when this firm called, you know, how would you approach that? To definitely taking risks is important, but to be thoughtful and make sure they make sense for you. So every fork in the road for me has been about what was right for me. I really spent a lot of time filtering out the noise, and I wish I filtered out even more noise. That's really important because you know yourself best and you need to explore that to really get to where that right place and passion is for you. In my younger self, I was focused on technical skills. Your interests and your passions are really important, and it may not always be in the day job, but do keep them up in your personal life. Do not let that go. I wish I traveled more for myself because it's something I enjoy so much. And I know when I traveled for work, I just learned an incredible amount. And then I think something that's hard, but really be reflective of where your confidence comes from and go harness your confidence and do not be afraid to go grab a leadership position or let people know you would like one. Telling people what you would want to do, whether it's a role, a leadership position, is really important because people really don't have time to know exactly what you're thinking. So if you're waiting for them to tell you, it's not going to happen. So a lot of it is just grabbing little bits along the way that make sense for you, telling people what you'd be open to, and just not being shy. But at the same time, have patience. Not everything is going to happen tomorrow. You do not have to often leave a firm. If you look at my history, I've had 5 different roles, 4 of which did not exist before I had them, all effectively in the same organization. And I couldn't have predicted that this would be the role that I would want or be asked to actually do. So everything is a balance. I definitely know that my younger self could have benefited from all of these learnings along the way.
You've had such an amazing career to this point, and I can't help notice your vote shirt. It seems like you could have a career in politics. You could do any number of things that you would like to do. What is it that 10 years, 20 years down the line, you might be interested in the future?
So I've always been passionate. I try to find ways to make sure I'm bringing up women, diverse candidates, education everywhere, whatever it is to just be involved in, whether it's a not-for-profit community or within the organization. For me, what I would really like to see, I'm very fortunate to be on many boards, to be able to have impact on young startup communities, CEOs, C-suite. And I think it's really important for me to really spend time developing more women into C-suite positions or founder CEOs. So that's something that I know the next forever, 30, 40 years, you know, however long that I live, I will never stop. It's incredibly important to bring everybody to the table. You know, I sit on our Disabilities Council as well. It's something that was new to me, but I have a very loud voice, as you can imagine. And so I'm open to using it. I would like to probably over the next 10, 15 years, bring a lot of this to other parts of the world. I really think that this is becoming a smaller world and we can have impact socially through all of what we know everywhere. And so we don't have to limit it to these borders at all. I also, you know, one of my own passions that I've developed, and I think as we go through stressful periods in life, has been really about wellness. And for me, one of the topics I find super interesting is food as medicine, stress reduction, whether it's meditation or whatever works for you, but really talking about that in a way to make people's lives holistically healthier. And I think that we need to talk about this, and I think we need to offer up solutions. And I know that a lot of corporations are doing a ton, startup community is doing a lot, but we need to start with it earlier because the stress that we endure in processing at all times, lots of information, there's just so much coming at us. So how do we find our place? How do we retrench? You know, it's an area that I would like to promote and be out there and really talking about my experiences as well as my practices and what I've learned. Stay tuned. It's going to be an interesting next fork, I think.
I'm sure it will be. And we're excited to see that. And another thing that we've talked about in the past is elimination of bias. And obviously, this concept of trust is core to what we do at Data Robot. And we have a real effort to make sure that people are aware of bias when it comes to AI and technology, and that you can sort of correct that. How do you view that as a theme in technology and a priority in technology, whether it's the technology itself or who has a seat at the table?
So I'm actually going to step it back and actually say, I think it starts with data and the approach around that data. So we go way back on a lot of research that was done in healthcare. There was a lot of bias because the data was centered around men, right? And probably specific demographics of men. And then we prescribe, these are the things that you do. And all of the prescription drugs were built around that. So we have to actually start with the data. We have to make sure that we are incorporating and looking at a total population of data. We then have to have more diverse candidates sitting behind the data. I think that's really critical. And that interpretation and understanding often comes from your own experiences and your own lens. It's right. Not easy if you have never had that lens to say there's bias here, because you just wouldn't even think that way. So the more people that we have looking at the information and data is critical. And then when we talk about design, are we designing for everybody? And I'll bring up, just because I mentioned the disabilities work that I'm involved with, is that you maybe wouldn't think about accessibility the same way until maybe somebody in your household needs a different type of support. You know, so there's incredible stuff going on, but design also has to be a holistic, collaborative design and development. And so until we kind of move away from building, designing data that's very singular into something that's more open. And then I would add something which people don't probably talk about as much, but the governance, is there a check along the process to say, hey, is there bias somehow in either the data, the workflow, the design, and have a check on that? That's probably an important one for sure.
Totally agree. Bina, thank you so much for joining us. We are so honored to have you here on More Intelligent Tomorrow and to be working with you and Bank of America. And thanks to our audience for joining as well.
Thanks, Dan. Appreciate the time and the opportunity.
Thanks, Bina. Talk to you soon.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of More Intelligent Tomorrow. Feel free to subscribe to continue discovering the heroes of tomorrow, illuminating the path forward today. Visit us at datarobot.com/podcast to learn more.